Pleased to be joined on the MRMC Doctor's Office program by Dr. Jessica Nguyen, who's a gastroenterologist, and appreciate her squeezing us in between patients today. Doctor, is it always a hectic schedule for you as we get close to the holidays?
Yes, it definitely gets busier as January 1 approaches.
All right. Well, what's the common complaint around the holidays?
I don't think there's the abdominal pain, heartburn, reflux. Sometimes, during the holidays, we eat a little more. We eat a little bit later in the evenings. We're eating different types of foods that may not be used to. So sometimes people have a lot more heartburn, what the people call indigestion, abdominal discomfort, bloating. Those are more common things that patients may experience just with more food that's available. And
all right, and if you have a question for Dr. Nguyen, give us a call, 263-2424, toll-free 800-892-2300. When I told someone you were going to come on with us today, the first question they said you got to ask her is, how do you know when your basic stomach ache turns into something you know you need to get looked at?
I think what we call warning signs or alarm symptoms, if someone's having unintentional weight loss, I think we all know our bodies, so if we're typically feeling fine or if we develop a new type of pain or discomfort, then that's always alarming. But, if you're seeing blood or black stools, if you're having, changes in your blood work that's suggestive of ongoing blood loss that maybe you're not, the patient's not seeing, that's something that we need to be aware of. Other alarm symptoms include, if you're swallowing and it's painful or if you feel like food's getting stuck. Those are all type of alarm symptoms that you should really be aware of and definitely come in for further evaluation.
Doctor, it's not the most pleasant topic to talk about, but should the way a stool looks be something that you pay attention to?
Yes. So, typically if it's a change for the patient. So if someone is normally having normal, soft formed stools, all of a sudden develops kind of a more, patients sometimes say that it's the change in stool caliber. So if it's a thinner stool, or they'll say, it's pencil-like or ribbon-like or a change in shape, then that's something that should be concerning. There's not a specific, change in shape or form, but if it's a change for the patient, then that's an alarm.
And really, if you're, say, going to go on vacation and you eat some food that you normally don't eat, that can cause some changes too, can it?
Oh, yeah. That's a great point, yes. Mm-hmm. Especially if you're traveling, out of the country, then there's different, things that, that's just kind of going to a different road, I guess, if you're talking about viruses and bacteria, but definitely if you're not used to certain types of food, and you never had it before and you weren't aware that it didn't agree with you, then that will definitely cause a problem, an issue.
All right. Can you put that in doctor terms for us, what you just mentioned there, something that doesn't agree with you? What would that actually constitute?
I guess if it doesn't agree with you, that could cause discomfort or diarrhea. Typically, I think it can cause nausea, vomiting, diarrhea, kind of like if you had just a stomach bug. Those are the type of things that you may experience if you're eating something that, your body doesn't react well to. Just trying to get rid of it. So,
are there good ways to treat diarrhea, or is that something that really shouldn't be treated by yourself? You need to get someone to look at it.
Well, I think that certain types of bacteria need to be treated. Certain types of bacteria don't need to be treated. So it's always a good idea, or certain viruses usually run its course and don't need to be treated. So it's always great to come in. We do some stool work, some evaluation, and we can look for, if it's a specific bacteria that needs to be treated or if it's a specific bacteria that doesn't need to be treated. It's always good to know. And we can run tests, stool tests, that will help us see which type, what it is that's causing the diarrhea.
All right. Doctor, can you belay some fears when someone comes in to see you, they aren't automatically going to be sent for a colonoscopy?
Sure, yeah. there's lots of other testing, and the patient's history is always the most important factor in determining treatment, because if someone's explaining, maybe that, they're having some mild discomfort and it sounds like heartburn, maybe it just needs to be treated with an antacid. Or if they're saying their pain is, you know, related to the holidays with stress, then we say, you know, let's see if your symptoms get better, you know, if when you take the stress away. So it's not always a, you know, reflex decision to undergo, you know, endoscopy or colonoscopy, but it really depends on the patient's history.
Well, what a great point you just brought up there, and I imagine some people may be thinking about this very thing. The holidays can be a very stressful time. Can that lead to some stomach pain?
Yes, yes, definitely. It can't. Well, you know, the gut and the brain are very interconnected. So, you know, if you're feeling stressed, it can definitely cause abdominal pain, cause some patients constipation, cause some patients diarrhea. We all react differently. Cause some patients nausea, vomiting. So it can manifest in many different ways. There's not, you know, one that's most common. It's just everyone's so different that it's hard to say, well, you know, if you're experiencing this, then it's most likely related to stress.
Well, from a physiological standpoint, I like to use one big word a day. From a physiological,
that is a big one.
how does that work? How does the head connect to the stomach and that kind of thing? How does that all go flow together?
Well, you know, we have nerves all throughout our body. That's why, you know, for example, if you're having like chest pain, that may, you know, you may have the pain in your shoulder, that actually may be your heart, because the nerves are all interconnected. Same thing if you're having. The nerves in your stomach are somehow connected to your chest, and we don't know is it your heart, is it your esophagus, is it, what is it? So it's just, I don't know if there's any exact, you know, interconnection of the nerves, but I think they're all interconnected.
All right, we got a phone call coming in.
Okay.
Moberly line, hi there, you're on the doctor's office program.
Yes, I for years have had trouble just at times, and it doesn't seem to be with any certain foods or anything, but I have trouble swallowing.
Okay.
Food just kind of doesn't go down, and I was wondering whether stress can cause that.
Well, it depends. So when you're talking about trouble swallowing, there's two different causes. One is if there's something in your food pipe causing it to, for the food to not go down, it's kind of like a pipe. If there's lots of debris or, you know, dirt or whatever that's built up in the pipe, then water can't flow through. Same thing with your food pipe. So in that case, then stress would not be related. But, you know, your food pipe actually moves. Like, it moves the food down. So if you're having stress, that can definitely alter the movement of the food pipe. But usually when someone's telling me that they're having problems swallowing, we do need to do an EGD endoscopy to make sure there's nothing there that's causing it. Like the first example, there's nothing in that pipe that's causing food to get hung up before
yeah.
we go on to...
Well, I've had two where they went down my esophagus. I've had two of those done, and they never could find anything.
They never found anything? So
no.
In that case, maybe it's what we call a motility. So if there's nothing physically blocking it, then maybe there's, you know, maybe the movement of your food pipe is not coordinated or it's not effectively moving the food down. There are tests that can look for that to see if that's what's the cause.
Okay.
All right. Thanks for calling.
Thanks.
She brought up another great point. And, doctor, when we talk about some people swallowing medications, oftentimes people, can it be a psychological thing about why they can't get that big pill down?
Oh, for sure. Yeah, definitely. That can definitely play a role. Typically, if someone's saying they can't swallow, then I think I mentioned it earlier, that is what we call an alarm symptom. So that is something that should definitely prompt someone to see GI and definitely warrant an endoscopy for further evaluation.
My son, who's now 22 and married, never always told me he could never swallow peas.
Oh, Mom, yeah, maybe that's food aversion, so maybe you're right.
Sometimes that can be psychological.
Yeah,
I think
so, too. That is true. There are certain foods that are hard for me to swallow, too. So.
All right. You know, when we talk about the holidays and we talk about food and family get-togethers, obviously, and you go into any workplace, I imagine even a doctor's office, you're going to find lots of treats there for people. If they overindulge in the sweets, can that cause some issues?
I don't know specifically if there is a cause for, you know, I guess it could cause heartburn in some individuals. I don't know if that's a risk, if sweets are a risk factor for reflux and heartburn, but in certain people, I can imagine that, you know, if you're eating too much and if you're eating late at night and you're going to bed, or if you're having increased, if you some weight gain, then that will cause some heartburn and discomfort.
All right. As we near the end of the year, and this is something, too, that the administrator brought up, a lot of people, as they get towards the end of the year, may not realize there are some tests that they are entitled to by their insurance. Is that something that people need to take a look at? Hey, maybe a colonoscopy is something I need to look at now.
I mean, yeah. So, I mean, in terms of colon cancer screening and surveillance, yes, it is something that even at any time people need to be cognizant of. You know, if they're due for a colonoscopy, if they have family history, you know, if they've had polyps in the past, those are all things that need to be done for sure by the end of the year. But at any time, they need to be very well aware of when their next procedure or when their next screening exam is due.
Dr. Jessica Wynn is our guest. She is a gastroenterologist. What are the recommendations now about who should have a colonoscopy and when they should have them?
So an average risk patient, meaning someone with no family history of colon cancer, typically in a first degree relative, we start at the age of 50. For African American, you start at the age of 45. If you have a family history of colon cancer, you start at the age of 40 or 10 years younger than the first degree family member that was diagnosed with a colon cancer. We can go into more detail, and typically patients don't know this, but if they're a first degree family member that had what we call a high-risk polyp, so they can either have colon cancer or high-risk polyp. But a lot of times we don't know, you know, what our mom, dad, brother, and sister, what type of polyps they have. We just know they have polyps. But if they have one of the a high-risk polyp in the first degree family member, then they're also due earlier as well.
Okay, you mentioned someone has a history of colon, and this is something I have no idea about, so I just want to throw it out there. If, say, my family has a history of cancer, but it's not colon cancer, is that still a red flag that I should probably get a colonoscopy?
Well, in general, no. If your family has a history of different types of cancer, like bladder, ureter, uterine, breast cancer, those are things that should, there's specific cancers that may prompt you to look into it. If there is like any type of inherited colorectal cancer syndrome that you may have, but on average, no. But if you had a syndrome, an inherited one, then usually it's multiple family members that are affected.
All right. That's something that's real interesting, because you wonder, is cancer hereditary or is it potentially hereditary?
It can be hereditary. There are certain hereditary, there are certain syndromes that are hereditary that increase your risk for colon cancer. And there's, you know, but on average, it is not hereditary.
Okay. So how important is it when we talk about colon cancer and that type of thing to catch it early?
If you can catch it early, then sometimes patients, we can actually remove it endoscopically, and they don't need to undergo surgery. And it's always important, also if you catch it early, that you don't want it, you know, that you prevent it, you catch it before it has spread to your other organs, and that significantly increases your, you know, your survival.
Is colon cancer typically something that is caught fairly early on, or is it generally caught in the latter stages?
In my experience, if you're coming in at, you know, the age of 50 or the with the per guidelines, you know, the age that is recommended, then it's usually caught early. If you're coming in, you know, 20 years, you know, after you're due for a colonoscopy, then that's a different story. But yeah, if you're coming in at the proposed, you know, time, then it's usually caught early.
Okay, doctor, where do we see this field going in the next 10 to 15 years? Where's gastroenterology headed?
You know, I think there's always, you know, increasing, right now, you know, people are talking about the fecal DNA screening test. I think that we're having improvements in screening and different methods. It's becoming more sensitive and more specific for detecting colon cancer. Even the tools that we're using now, you know, some of the, you know, endoscopes are, you know, I've used some of the older ones, and I use the ones that are the most recent ones, and it's significant. I mean, you're detecting such tiny little polyps, which would not have been detected, you know, years ago because of the improvement in our technology. And there's always, you know, changes in guidelines, so we're becoming more aware of, you know, colon cancer screening, Barrett's screening, so esophageal cancer prevention, so lots of different types of preventative measures as well.
All right, we got another phone call coming in. 800 line, hi there, you're on the doctor's office.
Hi, I have a question. I have been told that my doctor doesn't think it's necessary to have a colonoscopy if you're over 75 and have had no problems in the last, say, 10 years.
What is your feeling on that? I think that's an accurate statement. Yeah. Usually we say, it depends on anyone, but I always leave it up to the primary care doctor. Typically, after the age of 75, we don't recommend colorectal cancer screening. Because of, you know, we always say if someone's life expectancy, depending on their other medical problems, is greater, is 10 years or less, then we typically don't do a colonoscopy. Now, if you're a real healthy 75-year-old that is, you know, up, moving, and can, your life expectancy is greater than 10 years, then I would say, yeah, I mean, I think that then that patient would benefit from a colonoscopy. And you always have to think, too, if we find something on that colonoscopy, would this individual want to undergo treatment, which can be extensive. So sometimes patients say, no, I don't want it because I wouldn't do anything about it. Sometimes patients say, I do want it. I leave it up to the patient.
That was his opinion. He thought if you were over 75 and hadn't, you know, been having any trouble in the last, say, 10 or 15 years, he didn't think it was worth putting the patient through all the preparation work at that age.
Right. I mean, I agree with that. Typically, I don't, unless, you know, I'm seeing this patient that's, and, you know, I leave it up to the primary care because they send referrals to me to undergo screening tests. So if they feel that the patient is healthy, you know, doesn't have a lot of other medical problems, isn't on a lot of medications, then, you know, I have done them on patients at that age.
That's what I want to know. Thank you very much.
All right, thanks so much.
You're welcome, ma'am.
All right, I'll ask you the question everyone out there wants to ask. When are we going to improve the preparation work for a colonoscopy so it isn't miserable?
I don't know the answer to that one. I think, you know, I always tell the patients that's the worst part of the whole entire process. So, I don't know. I mean, I haven't had a colonoscopy done yet because I'm not at that age yet. But I empathize with patients that have to do it because it sounds, you know, not enjoyable, but it's for, you know, the patient's benefit.
Yeah, can you explain in layman's terms why that is necessary to do that?
Because you want, so that preparation is going to give me the clearest view of the colon, and for their patient's own safety, you don't want me to miss anything because the bowel prep is, you know, because the colon's covered with stool. If it's covered with stool, then I can't see these little tiny or even really flat polyps that I may miss that can turn into cancer. So you want me to be able to have a really good picture of the colon.
So when you do the colonoscopy, what all do you see, doctor?
I'm seeing the inside of the colon. So what we call the mucosa. It's kind of, it's the lining of the colon. So I'm looking for any irregularities in that mucosa. In the lining.
So what should it look like, and what's a cause for concern from your standpoint?
Well, you know, it's typically smooth. Any what I call bumps. Bumps can be polyps or masses or things that need to be removed. So if it's a small polyp, I remove it. If it's a large mass and I think, you know, it's suspicious for cancer and I can't remove that because I think it's cancer, then I take samples of it, and then we run those samples, and if it's positive for cancer, then we send them on to our colorectal surgeons.
So here's the question some other folks may be wondering about it. If you do have the colonoscopy and there's a red flag raised somewhere, how long does it take to get the results, say, hey, everything's fine, or I better get this?
I think within a week.
Can you generally tell?
Yes. Yes, I can. And, you know, actually, most of the time when I think something is cancer, I don't even wait for that biopsy, the sample result to come back. I go ahead and send them on to the surgeons, the colorectal surgeons.
How good is it from your standpoint, though, when you get the test results back to be able to tell someone, hey, you're fine, this is nothing to worry about?
I think it's great. I think it definitely puts the patient's, you know, mind at ease, especially, you know, patients that, you know, may have had a family member with colon cancer and they're very concerned and very worried for their own health. So I think, you know, I always see a sigh of relief, I guess, when I say, you know, your colon is fine, it's normal and healthy looking.
So are there some things we can do in our everyday life to improve our colon health?
I think just having a good, you know, good bowel regimen, making sure you're having at least three bowel movements a week, you know, avoiding constipation, high fiber diet, you know, the typical avoid tobacco, alcohol, foods. I think that's just maintaining good health overall is the same type of thing for your colon.
Okay, I'm not a smoker, so I'll just ask this question. How does smoke affect the colon?
I don't know exactly how it affects the colon. I don't know the actual pathogenesis and, like, the mechanism of how smoking does, but it's a risk factor for, you know, I'm sure it disrupts cell regeneration, and that causes the cells to not regenerate properly, and then they become, you know, they can crazy or they become abnormal, and then those abnormal cells keep producing and then they keep generating, and that can, I'm thinking, can lead to cancer.
But everything's interconnected. I mean,
right.
The brain's connected to this and that, and the lungs are connected here and there and that kind of thing, right?
Correct.
All right. How about simply getting up and moving around a little bit, even from someone who's not very active, or, say, an elderly person who doesn't move around a whole lot, even just getting up and moving a little bit, can that help?
Yeah, I think that's great for anyone. I think it's a great idea to stay active and be healthy.
All right. How about the treatment of colon cancer? Do we see that going anywhere in the next few years?
Well, I think it's made a significant improvement recently. Now we can actually remove cancers endoscopically. So I myself don't, I mean, I may remove a smaller one, but a lot of times these cancers are larger masses, and I send them on. I can send them on to our advanced endoscopists, or my colleagues at the university or, you know, at Boone, and they can actually remove these polyps in, like, without having to undergo surgery. It's a more extensive technique. It's a longer, but I think it's great. It saves the patient having part of their colon removed.
Boy, the less invasive, the better. Isn't that a pretty good assessment?
Right, right.
All right, so if someone wants to get a hold of you and wants to come in and see you, or if they want to have their primary care physician refer them to you, what's the best way to do that?
They can always call my clinic, or they can call the hospital and set up an appointment that way.
All right, so where exactly are you located, doctor?
I am in the Moberly Medical Clinics. I'm attached to the hospital. My clinic is attached to the hospital.
All right, so just give the hospital a call, and they can definitely hook you up. All right.
Yes.
Hey, doctor, thanks so much for being with us. Want to wish you and your family a Merry Christmas and look forward to doing this again.
Okay, thank you.
All right, Dr. Jessica Wynn, she has joined us today on the MRMC Doctor's Office Program.